So yeah, I'm looking at if I can do this for 40 years and then talk about it for another 20, maybe I've got a career.
So no retirement plans in sight?
You know, I can't spell IRA and I can't count to 401 very well. So, yeah, I'm going to be... My fervent desire, Scott, is that when my ticket comes up, that I'm in the middle of a card trick at a gig that I've been paid in advance for.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week, we continue with the second part of recordings from my week at the Magic Castle, actually before my official week even begins. In this podcast, we open at the Magic Castle swap meet on Saturday, April the 18th. Just before it began, I walked around to visit with a few friends who were setting up their vendor tables. First up was Funny Eddie, whom I first met at Dean Dill's barbershop. He talks about what happened to Dean's magic stuff after he died. I was fortunate next to talk with Joe Porper, who is well known for his quality craftsmanship in handmade card clips, linking rings, and more. He also introduced me to his marketing manager, Scott Jenkin, who talks about the sales of his equipment. After the swap meet opened, it got pretty crazy pretty fast. Apparently, this was open to the public, and due to something that got into the social media, a lot of non-magicians came in. I overheard several people say that they had never been inside the castle, but for $8 admission, it was worth it to take a look around. Also, there were many people who were not buying, but asking the vendors to demonstrate a trick. They were obviously not magicians and probably had no business being there. But, anyhow, there were many old friends I ran into, and I got to briefly speak with many of them, such as Terry Lunsford. In this podcast, he talks about his snake basket sales over the years and what he's been up to lately. After the swap meet was over and people were gathering outside for the valet to bring their cars around, I ran into and chatted with Andrew Goldenhirsch. We wish him a happy birthday today and see how he plans to celebrate. I spent the next day, Sunday afternoon, with Doc Eason and recorded a little chat where he talks about what he's been doing since the close of the Tower Bar several years ago and his current projects. We conclude this second part of my 2015 Castle podcast series with a chat in the Magic Castle Library with Stephen Himmel, who was performing the early close-up shows this past week. He was also a two-time winner of the Magic Castle Strolling Contest, which he talks about here in our chat. So relax and imagine that you are in Hollywood, California at the world-famous Magic Castle, where you can enjoy some curiosity conversations with some amazing magicians here on The Magic Word.
Well, the swap meet is about to begin. It's about 9 o'clock over here, and the doors will be opening. I'm now with Funny Eddie.
So. Yeah. Well, you're interviewing me. I got to make sure my mustache looks good.
You look good on the radio. You got a face for radio,
watch
you know.
Just watch this.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay.
No, I'm just
Who
kidding.
Are
okay,
you now?
Let's do it now. I don't know. But all right.
So we first met over at Dean Dill's barbershop, and the question I was going to ask is what happened to all of his stuff?
Paul from Hocus Pocus has a lot of it right now.
Okay.
Downstairs.
Oh, and he said, is that right? Here's
yes,
me,
he
so.
Actually does. Paul was nice enough to give me my picture that I had up on the wall.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So
you got your picture back.
I got my picture back, which is just weird because I gave it to him in the first place.
Well, it was funny because just last year I had given him my picture to put over on the wall, and we hadn't had more than just a few months before he passed. So.
I know.
But so the shop is gone, sold?
It's done.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's gone.
I didn't know if anybody had purchased it or another barber or anything, and so it's just for lease now, basically.
I think so.
But as for all the property, then, did he will that to somebody or what happened?
To be honest, I have no idea.
Okay.
I'm out of the loop on that stuff.
But you said Paul was the one who was downstairs, and so he's...
Yeah.
His wife is still around.
You know, his wife is still around, right, Joe?
Yeah.
That's Joe Porper, just so you know. Paul from Hocus Pocus took a lot of he did an estate sale, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm. So they've already gotten rid of a lot of this, so these are some of the remains that are still down here, so to speak.
Yes, okay. Not those, but yes, very true. True. I know that Chad Allen actually got his table, the red table. And he's just stoked. He calls me up every day and he tells me about it.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, it is.
All right, well, I'm going to talk with Joe just a minute here.
Yes, great talking to you.
Okay.
Funny Eddie.
Yep. And so Joe Porper is here also with stuff that you're selling. So you brought a lot of your things here.
A few things.
I've noticed that some of the other things are being sold secondhand, you know, here at the swap meet of some of your things. How long have you been making fine magic material?
Probably about 40 years.
Oh, so young man, just not that long ago.
But I got a partner now. His name is Scott Jenkin.
Okay, and have you taught him your...
I haven't taught him anything. He just knows how to how to move stuff and how to.
He's a marketer, or does he know how to turn metal or anything?
No, he's a marketer.
Okay, so you still make it, and then he sells it, basically.
Right.
Okay, and so are you teaching your craft to anybody then to pass this down?
No, not really. I haven't taught anybody anything.
What was the first thing that you ever made?
A little paddle, a toothpick paddle trick. I don't know if he's got it here or not.
I've seen that, where you put the toothpick on...
And it moves over.
It moves over,
yeah.
Up or down and around like that.
Right.
Yeah. So you've basically kind of, again, taken classics and just made
plastic
it a better quality.
Plastic wood. Mm-hmm. Plastic or wood.
Mm-hmm.
Make it out of aluminum.
Yeah. Was your profession in woodworking or machines or something before you started doing this for magic? Or
machine is most of it, mm-hmm. all the time, yeah.
Then you retired from that and started doing this? Or?
Yeah, I figured keep myself busy.
Yeah, and found a market, certainly, I guess.
Right. There's a story behind that, why I did that.
Let's hear that.
The story was that I took my daughter to a magic store because she liked magic.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy showed a little paddle. And he fooled the hell out of me.
Uh-huh.
And I said, how does it work? He says, you have to buy it. For me,
When the trick is sold. Yeah.
So I bought it, and took it home, took it all apart.
Yeah.
And it was so simple that I thought I'd fool that guy, and I took it completely apart and readjusted it, redid whatever I needed to do on it, and took it back to the store. And had the owner, I showed him that trick, and he says, God, that's a great trick, Joe.
Yeah.
So he says, how much is it? And I sold it back to him.
Sold it back to And then you started manufacturing more because he knew he could sell some more of those. And that was the first thing, and then kind of led to others.
Right.
What has been the most popular selling item that you have?
That was a very popular trick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the rings were very popular. Mm-hmm. I made a ghost ring, which this is not it. This is something else.
It's hard to find, huh?
No, it's
find the key
just,
there.
No, I know where the key is at. It's just
okay. Matthew,
sure.
Sorry. Well, how much can you get it for?
This key, if you just tap it a little bit.
Yeah.
It open up.
Oh, by tapping it, it opens. Okay.
Yeah, and then you can do your thing then, and you can just close it. You can actually hand it to somebody.
And they still won't be able to open
it. They can't open it unless they knew where to tap it.
Right. Right.
So,
and that, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, was that your idea? Or
yeah.
Okay. It is very nice. Yeah. What did the set sell for?
$450.
Okay. Wow. That's great. Three rings, or how many do you
three.
Get? Three. Uh-huh. What about the card cases? I mean, the card clips and things like that. I've been.
That's the other thing that I came up with. And they got different prices on them. They got prices from $40 up to $80. The clips go for.
Right.
No? Scott?
Yeah. Which one is he looking for?
No, he's not looking for.
Yes, I see. Well, anyhow, thank you. No, I just wanted to chat briefly over here and kind of see that some of the things that that you've been making. And so, Scott, my name is Scott Wells also.
Oh, hi.
Scott, what's your last name?
Jenkins.
And so you're the marketing partner. I was just asking Joe about some of the more popular selling items, I guess.
Yeah,
what turns out to be the bread and butter of the operation are the clips, because mm-hmm. it's just such a genius item. You know, you'll find guys that with collectible clips or with collectible card decks where you're paying like $15 a deck for cards.
Sure.
You know, they want to keep them in good shape.
Well, particularly like where I live in Houston, and it's very humid. And
right,
so I have
exactly.
to keep a card and a clip.
And we've been selling a lot of these internationally to, like you said, really humid places.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a good idea. It's a good idea, and
yeah.
it also keeps them almost like new.
Like new, right.
Right. It's like a card press that you can have in your pocket. He's also got just... How do I put this? I started working with Joe because there's just so many things that are just absolute genius.
Mm-hmm.
And he was thinking of retiring, but I said, you know, these things deserve to still be out there. They need to be out.
Yeah.
Magic needs Joe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I stuck around and basically stepped up to the plate and said, okay, I'll do the heavy lifting. You do the creative. Let's get this stuff out.
Yeah.
And the rest is mystery.
I like it. And for people who want to look online or buy online, what's the website, by the way?
Well, right now you go to joeporper.net.
Okay.
But coming up in about a month or so, everything's going to get folded into a new site called illusion.works.
Okay.
And... don't worry, they'll both point to the same
okay.
thing, so don't worry.
Got it. Good. Scott, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
For the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out. All right. We've got, we're still here at the swap meet over here, and I've got a good friend Terry Lunsford that I've not seen in a long time. Terry, very good to see you.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Tell me, how's the NASCAR? I mean, you had like a NASCAR car or something. Didn't you? You're still into that? You're still doing that?
Actually, it was a precision driving car, and
okay.
I still have it, and I'll be bringing them back up with me when I come to work at the Castle next month.
Oh, is that right? And so, is it street worthy? I mean, you can actually drive
it's street,
it?
It's street legal. It's called an Ariel Atom.
Yeah.
It's 0 to 60 in 2.8 seconds.
Wow.
And it's...
Where do you drive that? I mean,
everywhere. It's my daily driver.
No. I mean, as far as to clock that. I mean, you have to go to a track, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. If you're going to go that fast, you need to go to a track, yes. There's a place in San Diego called Street Legal that they go down for the 8th mile drag races.
Yeah.
And a thing called Autocross, which is a precision driving event. It's 30 turns in a 60-second course.
Yeah, wow.
So,
now, I know people are going to remember you from the snake basket that you were making. You stopped making those a long time ago. Did you sell the rights to somebody else, or are they being made, or what's the status?
No, actually, I'm still making them.
Are
now.
You?
I'm just not advertising them
oh,
anymore.
Oh, okay.
You're
not making as many as you used to since, I guess.
Yeah, I'm kind of semi-retired out of the business now. I kind of make them for people who want them.
Okay.
And plus, there are a few wholesalers that I sell them to now. I never
if somebody wanted to buy one, where could they find you? I mean, is it just like online, or they send an email to you, or what?
Oh, yeah, funnymagic@cox.net, COX.net.
Okay,
and
easy enough to remember.
Do that.
But you don't advertise them like you used to. You had a full-page ad, seems like, you know, every month in Linking Ring or Genie or something.
Oh, for 15 years I ran full-page ads, 1 month in Genie, 1 month in Magic, and then twice a year in Linking Ring. So.
I felt like that, gosh, this guy must be selling the heck out of these things to afford a full-page color ad like that. So
well,
I'm sure that was a good, he probably did sell. How many of those have you sold, you think, over the years?
Oh, maybe, I hate to say,
lots.
4,000 or 5,000 of
oh,
them
my
over
goodness.
The last
wow.
20
wow.
years.
Wow.
But I bought you my car.
That's cool.
So back to that again.
Now, Lisa, your wife, right?
Lynn,
sorry. And is she still working with Phoenix, University of Phoenix, I thought, wasn't she?
University of Phoenix.
Teacher. Yeah.
She has her own private practice.
Yeah.
She works for three other colleges, but she runs the counseling program for the University of Phoenix.
Cool.
She's also become the foremost leading authority in selective mutism for children in the country.
I did not know that.
You look up her name, and that's who comes up.
Yeah.
So.
Now, you said you're going to be working at the castle. You have, didn't you win Parlor Magician of the Year or something some years ago?
No, I was nominated for Bar Magician of the Year.
That was it.
And I came in second after Doc.
Doc who?
Yeah, Doc. He's in.
Yeah.
And,
but they finally retired that, I think, so he'd won so many times.
After the first year, they quit offering it.
No. Oh, okay.
So, which I think is, that's my favorite place to work. I think they should offer a Magician of the Year.
That is
because it's a different kind of magic.
Fun thing. Yep. And so, again, you're going to be coming back and working the palace? Or the
parlor, actually, I'll be coming back to work the...
W.C. Fields Bar.
The W.C. Fields Bar. Okay. The week of the award ceremony, actually.
There'll be a lot of people in town, I'm sure, for that. There'll be
a lot of fun. I'll be here Thursday through Saturday, because I think Sunday is the event.
You live in Los Angeles, or Glendale?
San Diego.
Okay. So you just drove up today for the swap meet.
Yeah.
Well, if you get a chance to come back next week, I'll be in the close-up room myself over there.
Well, I'll be here. Definitely, I'll be here.
Good. Because I need some friends in the audience. It's going to be a different show.
Oh, you don't need any friends in the audience. You got friends everywhere you go.
You're the best. So. You going to come back and lecture again sometime soon?
I just finished a lecture on bar magic, as a matter of fact, here at the Magic Castle in December.
Okay.
So I'll probably be back next year sometime.
Okay.
I try not to do too many lectures in one place.
Yeah.
You know, I try to like spread it out. You know?
Yeah, that's why I got a fast car, to keep on the move.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So, well, good. I appreciate the good talking to you, and I don't want to keep you from spending your money over here.
Oh, yeah, I got a lot of money to spend, too, I tell you right now.
Yeah.
I'll see you later. You have a good day.
Okay, thanks a lot. Oh, one more thing. Yes. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word.
Yes.
What would be your magic word? What is your philosophy? What is your chi? What's important to you? It could be a word, a sentence, a phrase.
A sentence. The trick doesn't mean anything. It's all about the presentation.
Perfect. That's great. Thank you, Terry. That's Terry Lunsford for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. Okay, the swap meet is over. We're waiting for our car over here, but it's Andrew Goldenhirsch's birthday. And what about a birthday? Hey, Andrew. Happy birthday.
Hey there. Thank you so much.
And
I appreciate it.
And Alan Bursky, remember from last time, also.
It's my birthday every day.
You're not getting a dance, though.
Did they not have a
birthday cake or anything for you here? I thought coming today that we might have like something upstairs.
I was hoping for something that, you know, that
surprise.
They drew up the seance room kind of thing.
Nothing.
Actually, you know, and this is classic, being here at the Magic Castle, I haven't even made inside. I've run into so many people that I've been chatting with outside here in the valet.
Yeah.
I've been here probably close to an hour and haven't even made in the door.
Well,
that's the Magic Castle community.
Here's what's for sale. Goshman Sponge Balls.
Yeah.
Shirogawa's Ninja Rings.
A lot of Svengali
cards. A lot of decks of cards.
Yeah.
So all the makings of a wonderful castle.
That's right.
A lot of L&L DVDs.
Some good stuff.
Somebody selling like miles of rope. That's it. That's what you meant.
So what are your plans for your birthday then? Are you going to do something tonight? Are you going to go out and have dinner? Are you going to...
I'm having a party for myself.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
For yourself.
Yeah. Well, you know.
That's right. Well, why not? Being since obviously no one surprised you here, you may as well make plans.
This is true.
Of your own.
This is true.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you got
to. So now you're old enough to have a beer. You're 21. So
indeed, it's very exciting.
So
I wonder what it's going to taste like.
Yeah. So you've been doing a lot of traveling?
I have been
overseas a little bit. I think I heard.
Yep. I was in Uruguay a couple months ago. I headed to Japan next month. And let's
speak a little Japanese. Leaving, I think, don't you?
I know enough to be funny.
Goodbye. Okay.
So,
enough
to get by.
Yeah.
Head to Austin next week.
Okay. And, Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas. Yeah. Working with Nick Lewin, which I'm very excited about.
Great guy.
And,
and you got to be sure to go and see Ray Anderson over there.
I am going to do my best.
Have you never seen that show?
Absolutely. I have. I saw it about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It absolutely blew me away. I didn't know Ray Anderson at all.
Yeah.
I had no idea what to expect.
Yeah.
Not only was I fooled incredibly badly several times, but he just has such an amazing way with the audience, with the group. You can tell it's his venue.
Oh, basically.
You can tell he has been there. And
he owns it.
Owns that place.
Yeah. No question.
It's
every
really
show,
wonderful.
Too. I mean, it's
It's
spot on 100% every time, you know, then, too.
That's
so
great.
Even from Houston, I mean, we're like 2 or 3 hours away, and I'll drive people up there. When people come to town to see me, I'll say,
wonderful.
You need to see Ray.
Yeah. It's worth the trip.
Yeah, he's
worth
really
the
good.
Trip.
So you're going to be in Austin then and working with Nick. Is this private affair or something?
You know, it's... I'm not sure. Yeah, I think it's a public event. It's at the North Door. I don't know if you've heard of that place.
Okay. Yeah.
Apparently Austin's some cool, Austin nightclub.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
And so the rest of the year, anything, you working at any conventions or something?
There are a couple things. Let's see. I think I'm going to be in Liverpool in July. Beyond that,
that's a magic convention.
That's actually it's sort of a hybrid. It's a public
festival, kind of.
Public festival. And waiting to hear about some things for the fall.
Awesome.
So yeah,
very good. Well, congratulations.
Thank you so much. Happy birthday.
I really appreciate it. You too. Okay, we'll see you later.
There's Andrew Goldberg.
The Magic Word Podcast, Scotty L. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and it's Sunday afternoon, and we've just had a wonderful time. Found a new place, by the way, I want to recommend if you guys ever get out to L.A., and that is Tommy's Hamburgers. Is that what it's called? Yeah, Tommy's Hamburgers. It's over on Hollywood, and everybody knew about it but me, I guess. Somebody had told me about it, and they're chili double cheeseburgers are just awesome. But I'm here with another awesome guy, Doc Eason. Hey, Doc.
Hey, Scott. Pleasure to be with you.
And it's always fun to talk with you as well. The last time I sat in these same chairs right here in this room was with Bob Cassidy, I think, last year. So we're not going to talk about mentalism today.
That's good.
Talk a little about close-up, because you've been doing a little bit of that for a couple of years.
A little bit of that. Not a lot of mentalism, but a lot of close-up.
Have you ever tried a little mentalism? Because I know Eric Mead, after he broke his thumb, was doing mentalism for a while. Does he still do that in his act?
Yeah. Eric is one of the best performers on the planet, and he's got a wide repertoire. He said, well, he can definitely go into mentalism, and he can go into, he's one of the top sleight of hand guys that I've ever seen work. So he can do it all. But anytime I do any ESP thing, it's always tongue in cheek. It's always played, I may fool him, but it's not the same kind of thing.
It's really more for a vehicle for humor.
Yeah. And that's basically most of my stuff. You know, often here at the Castle, I'll say my trick per minute ratio isn't real high. You're looking for the trick a minute guy, go up and see Johnny Ace Palmer or whoever's working the close-up, because the chances are they'll do more tricks in 2 minutes than I do all night long. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that my approach is a little bit different, and I like to play with the folks and have fun with them and connect with them, and sometimes that can't happen in a 20-minute show. That's why they stick me in the bar. But sticking me in the bar is like throwing me in the briar patch, Brer Fox. Yeah. You know, do that. So, and we just haven't had just 2 weeks of nothing but fun and music down there.
Well, I think it's a lot of fun also, of course, with the Magic Castle, having a variety of performers. So this way you can see the different styles of people. So some are more serious, semi-serious, very funny, comedy, magic, mentalism, or whatever.
Yeah, definitely a plus factor of it. But you know, another thing that's amazing to me, you might want to try this if you're playing there in the close-up room, as you will be next week, is every time I start a show, I say, how many people, first time in the Magic Castle? And more than half the people will raise their hands. It's astounding to me. And so I keep thinking back to, let me think, how did I feel the very first night I walked in here?
Mm-hmm.
And who did I see work? And who stood out and who didn't?
No pressure. Wow.
Yeah. Well, and I think there is a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
So,
because you have to make a good impression. Someone's coming in and they've heard this is the famous world-famous Magic Castle, and so this guy is going to be great.
Yeah, exactly. And so,
thanks a lot.
I used to come in with all kinds of new stuff that I wanted to work on, but then I realized that, you know, if this is the first time they've ever been in the castle, the first time they've been in the WC Field Bar, the first time they've seen me, why am I doing B and C material? I better just pull out the big guns. So I find myself doing Card Under Glass and my standard repertoire kind of over and over, because that crowd gets up, moves away. It's like taking your finger out of a bucket of water. The hole's not there very long. Poof, it fills right back in with new people. How many people? More than half the people raise their hand. So I go back to the shallow well that I have.
Right.
But I just don't feel that given, you know, the B and C material or trying something brand new and trying to work out the bugs on it. I've seen a couple guys over here who really experienced top-notch guys, and they're trying new stuff, and you go in there and you go, why did you do that? I mean, you know, you're much better than that, you know. So anyway, why don't you think about reworking your act and what you're planning on doing?
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. But I mean, think about it though. I mean, it's you know, this is the chance to make the first impression, and you know, you only get one chance to do that. So anyway, that's another reason I work at the bar. I don't do set shows. You know, with people are here, we'll get it going. You know, new people get in, we fill them up with cocktails, and then we start to roll again. But so it's more of a continuous show.
kind of like the way I used to do it at the mm-hmm. tower. You know?
But you only do about 15 minutes at a time, and then they refresh with new people?
Yeah, probably longer than that. That's one of the reasons that, you know, that you know, it's more like I have trouble introducing myself in 20 minutes, you know, you know, and getting the name.
Makes it longer to tie your time.
Yeah, well, I can do that quicker than that. But the point is that it's just pull out your eight material and run like hell, you know, and then and if it's over, then you get up and go. I also make the caveat that this is the only showroom in the castle that doesn't have a start and an end time. So if you look down and you go, oh, God, we got to be at the parlor right now, just get up and walk out. People have been walking out of my act for years. I'm not sensitive to it. In fact, I'm used to it at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, so I make a joke out of it, but I don't want you know, I don't want to slow down anybody or have them miss something because I'm running long on my deal. So it seems to work out really well.
And you had won the Bar Magician for a couple of years or 1 year, or then they
Well, they only gave me 2 years. I got the very first one in 2004. And then Whit, Pop Hayden got it the next day, next year, and then they decided to not do that because bar magic is an interesting animal. Not everybody can do it.
That's a small group of people actually who would be qualified to do
well,
that.
Well, that's kind of what came down to it. We're gonna it's just going to go from him to Anton, Bob Sheets, to Eric Mead, to me, to Dip, to Dip, to Dip. He's going to go around in circles because a lot of people. A lot of the guys that they throw down there simply figure they'll do their close-up act on there. And, it, you know, you're doing close-up magic, but it's not the same as the close-up gallery, you know? I mean, it's a different animal. And
so you have to react with the people who are drinking down there, which is a little bit different, where that in the close-up you're doing a formal show as opposed to interacting. You're doing a lot of comedy and everything, but you're not just saying, what is your name? Will you hold this card or whatever? Mm-hmm. People are talking back to you, and it's very...
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of improv, and people have come up to me afterwards and said, "Well, your improv skills are top notch," and that's, you know, that's what it really is about, is interacting with the people and the beauty queens that show up there, or the big lunky guy, or
drunks.
Drunks. The drunks are not exclusively at the W.C. Fields Bar. There's five bars in that building over there. By the time they get down to the W.C. Fields Bar, they've already passed four of them.
Yeah.
So chances are they've had a cocktail or five before they get there. But yeah, it's just a different animal. It's not the same as just doing a close-up act in there. You know,
well, you learned it, obviously, and honed it over the years at the Tower Bar, which closed back in...
2004.
Okay.
After 29 years of operation, I was there 27 of them. And then I've been at another bar in Snowmass, the Stonebridge Inn, and I've been there for the last 11 years. So I've been in Snowmass doing bar magic for 38 years.
So the Stonebridge, it was only like about a year in between there, I think, because you were doing some speaking and stuff for a while then too, didn't you?
Yeah, but I rolled right into it. We closed the doors of the Tower in April 2004, and winter season of 2004-05, I was already installed there because I realized that a lot of people are going to come out look for me. They don't know where I am. They're not going to call me up in the phone book. They, you know, I need to have that fall in factor. And so it's been a very lucrative and very fun relationship with the Stonebridge, even though I don't pour whiskey there, which is kind of ironic. I do bar magic, but I'm not selling whiskey.
Hmm. So you're just doing magic, and so you're really not hyping drinks, so you're not working like with Speedy or Flash or whatever the guy's name was you used to work with?
Right, Zoom.
Zoom,
No, it's not quite the same as that, because the emphasis is not necessarily on selling whiskey. So I do more of a Tom Mulica style mm-hmm. magic bar, where you know, that you go over there and get the cocktails, come back over here, sit down, and I'll do the show for you.
So it's a set time?
Yeah, it doesn't go off on the numbers, but it's about an hour long.
Yeah.
Because that's about how long they want. They can sit there and later in the night when it gets to, you know, it gets a little looser and, you know, at dinner hour's over and they're not waiting to sit down.
Well, cocktail waitresses come around and refresh their drinks, I guess? Or?
Yeah, sometimes.
But that's not what they're pushing?
No, they just want to have me there. And mm-hmm. it's turned out symbiotically well for them. I'm an attraction after 38 years up there. A lot of people come back to see me.
I was going to say, so what's that like? Do you ask the same question that you do to the audience here at the castle? In other words, you say, how many people are here for the first time, half the people? Would you say about the same there, because a lot of people come to see you, or more?
Probably, well, I don't know, probably even, you know. Some people have never heard of me before, and they wander in. I mean, I have a good support system. Snowmass is a small pond. Sure. I'm a pretty big fish. So what do we do tonight? Well, you got to go to the Stonebridge and see this guy. He's been around for a long time. But at any given night, there's, you know...
Is that year-round, not just the ski season?
No, it's just ski season and summer. Winter and summer. It's off-season now.
So spring and fall are not good.
They lock the doors.
Wow.
Huh. And so that's when I get out and go on the road and do this, you know, come out to the castle and go on tour, do a little bit here. I'm going to, you know, go into the UK in a week, do a little lecture tour over there, pumping the new project.
And what's that project?
Well, thanks for asking. that was for after 38 years of honing the card under glass and turning it into a magnum opus, Cosmo. And I and his team put together a beautiful two DVD set of The Card Under Glass. The whole, it runs 35 minutes, could be 30 to 35 minutes of card tricks. And but the common theme all the way through it is to putting the card under the glass. And it's like, okay, we do this, we do a triumph, and there it is there. We do a transposition, the card shows up another thing. And it's a running gag kind of a deal. It's something that years ago I saw Bob Reed do an act, and I love Bob. And he did he had a running gag throughout this whole thing. And I thought, God, how can I figure out a running gag? What can I do? And obviously, put the card under the glass is so startling that now I do it six times. And I tell them it's going to happen, and it still gets under there. So This whole DVD is a lesson in audience management and card handling. It's all done from a shuffle deck in use.
Do you talk a little bit about the history of that? Because I was thinking that Eddie Fechter was the first one I was thinking of who had done that, but I'm sure it predates him.
I'm not sure. I didn't know that Eddie did that. I'm not sure. But my direct involvement, Bob Sheets did that the first time I sat down in front of Bob Sheets. He kept putting a card under my drink, and it was like, what? But that goes back to Heba Haba Al.
Yeah, right.
And that's kind of where the what I consider the start. But I'm sure somebody put something under the drink before then. But Heba brought that into. But Heba only would do it twice. Bob would do Heba's routine, and he'd do it twice. And I just realized that this is a perfect thing to, you know, do another trick, and then suddenly have that, you know, that signed card show back up under the drink, and do something else, and then suddenly that card back under the drink. So it's the running gag thing. There's a toolbox in there, shows you, you know, explains my work on the top change, double lift, false shuffle, push through, up the ladder cut, whatever, you know, there's a lot of different tools that we discuss.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike a lot of the stuff that's hitting the magic market these days, you don't need a special deck of cards or a special gizmo that you put into the deck. This is a real regular deck of cards. You give me a deck of cards, I'll do the same routine for you. So that's one of the things I was going after.
You just need to have the knowledge and the misdirection, or I should say direction, the subtleties that are involved with this, I guess, that you teach, basically.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of people are commenting on, is the audience management, you know, and a lot of Gary Kurtz leading with your head stuff. You know, if you lean forward and engage them and you stand back and you go to your full height, their eyes automatically go up.
I was watching you the other night do that routine, of course, and I was noticing that as it went under the glass that you stood away, so obviously it seems like that's far away from you. There's no way you could have been over there because it's a full step away. You know, and you did lean back. I
do a lot of this in and out kind of thing. And if you... Well, if you don't have Leading With Your Head, you should find it.
It's a great book.
It's an unbelievable book, because that's the real secrets of how to misdirect people using your body. And in lectures and workshops, I'll just, you know, watch this guy's eyes now, okay? So I, you know, really tight, focusing on the deck, and they're looking at the deck too. And I do is stand up and to my full height and ask them a question, and their eyes automatically go up. I mean, unless you're really fighting that thing, they can't not do that.
Right.
And so people say, God, I can't. How do you keep going under the glass with it?
Mm-hmm.
I just stand up straight and ask them a question. And their eyes come up and they go, I'm from Houston, Texas, you know. And they go, God, how did that card get under there? I did it when you're not looking, you know. So, but it's a fun project. And one of the fun parts about it for me was the live performance is red hot. There's a wonderful crowd of people in the bar we did it with. And then we go back and do a performer's commentary on it, just like the director's commentary on a DVD. And so we see the same show, and you can hear my voice there, but I'm talking over it. I say, notice now I step back, watch their eyes. See that? All right. And then Phoebe has done a thing where she spotlights the card going under the drink so that, you know, just in case you miss it, you can see it go under there, and you can also see the misdirection happening. It's a great product.
So when you're saying that you're working on this project and you're going over to England, the project's already done. You're just going to be going over. You're going to be lecturing on this particular thing or just selling?
I'm going to be lecturing in general, and then I've got some workshops where we just we'll go in there and roll up our sleeves and go, you know, do this routine and show them how it's done. The nice part about this also, Scott, is that there's a transposition, there's a triumph, there's an explanation, there's a three-card money thing in there. Every one of those tricks that's on there that happens to end up under the drink again, but it doesn't have to go under the drink. Each trick is modular. You could take it right out and do this double transposition trick that I opened the whole thing with and just do that. Mm-hmm. It's a killer. Yeah. All right, just do a triumph. It's a killer. You know, each one of these are very strong in their own right. I just happen to string them all together on this. You know.
Now, these things that you're teaching, then, obviously, are good whenever you're going to be at a table, at a bar, or something like that. Is it something, though, that you would recommend that could be done in a strolling situation?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. Sorry, yes, my phone.
Yes, absolutely. There's no reason you couldn't do
that. So if there are people who are seated at the table or a high boy or something and they've got their drinks there, that you can obviously just kind of use that as the tabletop.
These tricks work by themselves. I mean,
it's not exclusive for the bar.
No.
Entertainer.
No. Not at all. And even the card under the glass routine, if you just figure, I don't want to try that. These tricks will you do the tricks then. Mm-hmm. You know, and they don't have to worry about it.
You've been working with Cos for a long time and had a series running for a while, and then had that live lecture with him for a while. How'd that all go?
Fabulous, fabulous. I've got a passel full of them here, and I'm going to take them over to England and help them sell it. And we got some other projects, very exciting projects coming down the line.
That you can tell?
Well, let's just say I've collaborated with one of the fellows who I think is an absolute genius in magic these days, is Garrett Thomas. Mm-hmm. And we put together some really interesting new work on the anniversary waltz. And that's all I'm going to say right now.
Wow. That's a great trick.
Yeah, it's the strongest card trick known to man. Mm-hmm. Garrett's got some really good touches on it. And we have an angle on this that I think is going to really get a lot of people's attention.
And revitalize the trick?
Perhaps.
The effect, by the way, for those few people who are listening to this who might be new magicians and don't know the effect, basically is that you have a card signed by a man and a woman, and basically when they...
A card signed by a man and a card signed by a woman.
Two separate cards. Yeah. And they would hold the card between their hand, cards between their hands, and then when they lift their hand, the card is one, it's signed on both sides.
Fused together by the power of their love.
Exactly.
God, I'm tearing up now just thinking about it, John.
Here's a napkin. It is a great trick.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Chris Carter was his
original trick, yeah. and it was originally published in Blinking Wing Parade some time ago. And in total disclosure, because I want to make sure that everybody gets credit where credit's due these days, Wesley James had a kind of a fusion thing, but it wasn't two face cards. It was a front and a back. I think it's called Forgery, I think is the name of the thing. So he certainly has credit mentioned as one of the sources for fusing the thing together. Mm-hmm. But Chris Carter was the one that came up with two face cards, you know, that are, you know, it's a double face card that's signed on both sides. And it's, you know, so he was the one that did it. But the original version of it, Chris Carter's thing, Carter is an amazing character, a great guy, and he has huge hands. He can palm a Buick, I think, if you worked it right. And he's, you know, a move guy, and so he did all these moves, and they were very sophisticated and really good. I couldn't get them all, and so I just boiled it down to two double turnovers to make it as simple as possible. That's all it is. So the strongest card trick known to man is also one of the most simple tricks ever devised. And so combined, it's a great thing.
Well, isn't that basically what magic should get down to, in which that, like, you were kind of the epitome of that, in which that it's not, certainly you do a lot of great finger flicking and a lot of moves and everything, however, that it's the entertainment and it's the effect that people are going to remember. I was just talking to Howard Hamburg the other night, and he was saying what Jimmy Grippo used to do, a card in sealed envelope, not into wallet, but into envelope, because if there are two people doing two tricks, the thing that they remember is that goes inside the envelope. Even if you have the envelope inside of a wallet, they forget about the wallet. So it's why not just go to the effect, basically.
Slice to the quick. And that's one of the things about the anniversary waltz. Over the years, I've been shown so many, and I'm doing air quotes now, improvements. A lot of them aren't. They just muddied the water, I think. You know, the back of that card goes to the back of this card, so it's double backer. Now we have a double face, and I was like, what? Just keep it simple, for God's sake. Josh J., bless his heart, has a great trick, a great routine using that, but he's also a triumph in between it. It's a cheek-to-cheek, kind of a reverse cheek-to-cheek thing. And I loved it, and it resets, and it's automatic and stuff, but it's the clarity and the purity of the effect. He signs a card, she signs a card, they come together in the deck, and now they're fused together. If anything else beyond that kind of makes it confusing, I think. So anyway, so this particular project I'm very excited about, because we just shot a trailer last week, and it's going to look really, really good. And it's going to be, even for those people that have the trick already or know the trick already, there's going to be an angle on this that they're going to want to pony up and get this too.
Well, I'll put a link on the website on the blog, so that way people can have an opportunity to go to the website and pick that up.
Well, once again, as with all of Cosmos, at least the Cosmos projects that I'm involved in, it's distributed by Murphy's to your local magic store, or Cosmos got it in his retail store, and I've got it in my, which is DocEasonMagicShop.com. Blatant pitch.
That's kind of what we're all about then also. So what do you find is your secret for success?
Oh, God, let me think here. Let me put that on pause for a moment. I don't keep on keeping on. I mean, I've been very fortunate. I was sort of, the tower was sort of given to me by Bob Sheets as a place for me to work, and I ended up working there almost 30 years.
It still would be if John Denver hadn't died, I guess.
Yes, I don't. I think so. You know, it was, and when it closed, it wasn't because it wasn't popular. It was on all of other extenuating circumstances, but. The fact that I was able to do it, you know, five nights a week, you know, five times a night, whatever routine I'm working on, boy, there's nothing like experience to get that out mm-hmm. there. And once you get that all down, then you can start to say, well, gee, that's an interesting shirt. Where'd you get that shirt? And what is this thing you have in your, you know, and you can just extemporaneize, if that's the right word for it. But, you know, you can just play with them, have fun with them. Mm-hmm. And
so the secret was basically that you had a place to get flight time, some place where you can play and you can be bad until you get better.
there's no better place to get that than in the street or the bar. You know, you can do it over and over and over and over, and there's something you learn by doing it that often that you can't find in a book. I'm writing the book. It's almost done, and but you can read it. It doesn't, until you internalize it and have it happen to yourself. Hard to make that.
You're physically writing a book? Another book,
yes,
I mean?
Yes,
what
I
is
have.
That?
Well, it's Doc Eason, The Bar Magic According to Doc Eason, basically. That's the working title.
You're taking excerpts from, like, Shot in the Dark and some of the other lecture notes and things?
No,
or is it completely
different?
It's not
a magic
different?
Book. It's more
autobiographical?
Autobiographical, and it's sort of for my souvenir market, for my fans.
Back of the room sales.
Yeah, general public again. Mm-hmm. But there are some very interesting aspects of the book that have to do with venue. How do you go about getting a job? How do you approach the guy?
So it's geared towards magicians, not the general public necessarily. Then, if you're going to be telling them how to get a job, I mean,
right.
General public wouldn't care.
That's the section in there. There's a section that has to do with magic, but the other ones are the stories that go on and on and on about John Denver in the tower and
like what. Give me one of the stories.
The day he walked into the bar one night and said, "Hey, who wants to go flying in my biplane tomorrow?" And I raised my hand tentatively. I said, "I'd like to go." He said, "Are you serious?" I said, "Hell, I'm serious. Are you serious?" So be at the airport tomorrow at 11. And the story about flying over the Rockies with, you know, an open cockpit biplane was spectacular enough, but then having the, you know, John Denver flying it right behind me was, you know, it's a great story. And a lot of anecdotes about stuff that happened at the tower the night the guy brought the gun in, you know, the night the fist fight happened.
I remember the gun.
There's a lot of, 28 years working there at the tower. Yep. A lot of stories.
The Children's Festival we used to have.
Children's Festival is mm-hmm. mentioned in there. So this, you know, it's just kind of a remembrance, a memoir. There's also a series on memory, There's a couple chapters, I mean, on memory, because that's one of the hallmarks of my act, is I remember people's names, and that's remarkable to them. Mm-hmm. I also have a humor section, and humor that comes out of the bar, you know. Woman walks up with two drinks in her hand and said, I always admired that in a woman who could, you know, drink like cook like her mother and drink like her father. And look like neither, that's an important distinction. But, you know, it was funny when I was writing these things, I sat down at the computer and I was completely blank. I could not pull any of that stuff out. But I walked into the bar and situation happens, and the lines just fall out of my, you know. People say, geez, you got a line for everything, Doc. I do have a line for everything because pretty much everything has happened. You know, the guy gets up and starts looking around and says, you're looking for the bathroom or a way out of here, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I play it for comedy, but almost every situation that happens in a bar happens there, you know, more often. So it's like humor Aikido. You know, you're ready for a situation, and that situation happens, there's the line. Another situation happens over here, there's another line. Doesn't happen that way every single night, but through the course of a week or two, boy, there's a lot of material that flies off. So what I had to do was bring one of these recorders to the bar and a little notepad, and I'd say something and people would laugh, and I'd go, I gotta write that down, I gotta put that in there too. So there's a big section on situational humor that happens in bars. So one-liners, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's a fun romp, and I've got some pretty good editors that are working with me on the thing, trying to bring it. I think giving birth to a child would be easier for me than a book.
Everybody who writes a book, myself included, knows how long it takes. It's not months. No, I think it is easier to give birth to a child because that just takes 9 months, and books take years.
Oh God, it's just I work like hell on it, and then suddenly it all, you know, I just get bored with it, or I don't feel like I'm getting anywhere with it. So there's been a series of fits and starts, but I have a pretty good team working behind me. They have sharp sticks. And they're poking me every time, you know. Yeah. So they're keeping me going. They're keeping me focused on it. So
I've been trying to do that with Walter Blaney. He's been working on a book for a long time, and he's a fellow who, as long as I've known him, always carries these index cards in his shirt pocket because he always has shirts with pockets. And so we'll be at lunch, and he'll say, "Oh, I got to write that." He'll tell me a story, then he'll pull out a pencil and he'll write this thing down. He says, "This goes in the book." And so he's always reminding himself to do something like that. But I'm using that same pencil to keep prodding him and saying, "Hey, let's get this book finished." You know?
Yeah. Well,
we're not getting younger.
No, we're not getting any younger. And Walter, I know, has a storehouse of stories, and, and all fun. So, yeah. So, yeah, I'm looking at if I can do this for 40 years and then talk about it for another 20, maybe I've got a career.
So, no retirement plans in sight?
I can't spell IRA and I can't count to 401 very well. So, yeah, I'm going to be... my fervent desire, Scott, is that when my ticket comes up, that I'm in the middle of a card trick at a gig that I've been paid in advance for.
So you still have some money to spend that hasn't been spent.
Just as long as it's in the account. I've been paid, maybe they could pay the piper.
I like that. I've heard people saying, well, it would be great if I have spent down to my last penny. But in this case, you'll still have some
left. I like to have a little bit in the back pocket as I go out.
Yeah. So. Well, that's the advantage, I think, certainly, of being a magician. That's something that you love that you can do for a long time. It was a fun I saw on Johnny Carson so many years ago. Howard Baker, I think, was his name. He was known as the world's oldest magician. He was 100 years old at the time and still performing. Does that ring a bell to you?
Yeah, I vaguely remember that. Yeah.
Point being is that as long as you've got your health and your mind and your fingers, that you could be nimble. Otherwise, you'd be a mentalist, I guess.
I guess so. But yeah, and hopefully we keep all the wire on the spool here, and it doesn't unwind here on me. But yeah, that's my story. And I'm not sure what the next step is for me. You know, I keep waiting for that other door to open, but there's a bunch of open doors with me right now. So.
You haven't done a lot of television. Now, there are so many magicians I see then right now who are like Penn and Teller Foolus or Wizard Wars and different people who have been making these kinds of appearances. Have you been asked to, or have you performed in or planning to do anything like that?
That's not high on my list. I'm rethinking that now. But ironically, when I came out, I stopped it. So I saw Joni Thompson in Las Vegas as I was coming out here to Los Angeles. And he said, yeah, well, I gave him your name, but unfortunately, you're too old.
That's interesting.
I said, really? He said, yeah, the demographic of Fool Us, look at everybody on there. Everybody in there is like the 30s and 40s, maybe early 50s. You know, I'm almost to the point of pulling 70. So I don't know. I never got the call. AGT called me a lot, several years ago, back when they were just awful with magicians, you know. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm not going to subject myself to that,
right?
You know. And
have you reconsidered that?
Not really. I'm not. You know, I'm not the Matt Franco. I'm not the Lehman mm-hmm. of David and Lehman. You know.
And I think they're looking for that demographic. As I've gotten those same phone calls. And I thought, I'm not going to go and embarrass myself or.
Yeah.
Because that, I'm not the demographic they're looking for.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so I don't know. You hear about the guy that, you know, I mean, like myself, I've been working this card under glass for 40 years. I do it on television. That's great. What are you mm-hmm. going to do next week? I don't know. I've been working 40 years on this part. I don't know what I'm going to do next week. I got to go out and suddenly hit the magic shop and buy some of this new poop that's coming down the chute every day. So, so TV is not one of my big favorite, my big...
Not in your bucket list.
Not in the bucket list. If it happens, it happens. But,
yeah.
I'll definitely listen if Penn and Teller want to talk to me, but we'll see.
Nothing really that you haven't done already that would be on that bucket list?
Just keep on keeping on.
Just the grandkids and everything, just kind of watch them grow. It's the way I am.
I'd love to be in a position where I could just push it up in a neutral, but... Even when I push it up in a neutral and just kind of coast for a while, I begin to go stir crazy. Mm-hmm. I've got to perform. You know that.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
You know, after about a month of sitting there drumming my fingers on the thing, I got to go out and gotta get in front of people because, the big guy's giving me a gift, and if I don't use that gift, I'm wasting it, and it begins to, make me twitch.
Mm-hmm.
So I was only half kidding that I want to be, in the middle of a card trick that I got paid in advance for. But I can see myself doing this for on and on and on.
Yep. One last thing as we kind of wrap up over here. That the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. I think I've asked you in the past about this and probably forgotten what your magic word is, or you may know what it is. But something that's important to you. What's your
what
you live by?
Those kind of magic.
Yeah,
words.
Your moral. Compass. What is it that's important to you?
Leap and the net will appear. There's one.
Yeah.
Life's what happens when you're busy making other plans.
Thank you, John.
Yeah. You betcha.
Splendid.
Yeah. Those kind of quotes kind of fall into my mind. One of my favorite magic words, though, appears on a poster that probably a lot of us have in our various magic rooms. Ask Alexander. The bottom of every Alexander poster was the words Avyaga Bombay. Now, I don't know what that, it just implies that this thing was printed in Bombay.
Yeah.
It was never printed in Bombay. Apparently, according to the biographies, Alexander was never in Bombay. And I don't know what Avyaga even means, but I remember Sheets had a big poster of the big billboard of Ask Alexander up on the ceiling of the Brook Farm Made of Magic. And on the bottom is Avyaga Bombay. So now, as we part company, there's a certain half a dozen of us that subscribe to this thing. But as we part company, say, okay, Avyaga Scotty, somebody told me, Cavey told me that Steinmeier has also picked up on that. So every once in a while, Avyaga like aloha or
right,
just a kind of a phrase that fits into a multi-purpose thing. It's an absolute nonsense phrase, but but Avyaga, man.
I like it.
You'll use it.
I think I will now. That sounds good. All right. Well, that was Doc Eason. And for the Magic Word Podcast, Avyaga. Scotty
Bombay.
Out. Bombay. It's Sunday night, and we're in the Magic Castle, and I run into Stephen Himmel, who is just doing the early show, before the early show. I should say you do the early close-up.
The early, yeah.
Starting at 5 o'clock.
That's right, starting at 5. <close-up.
laughs> And that was like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I guess.
That's right, yeah, it's four days.
Yeah. Yep. But I want to talk with you about the strolling show or the that you had won.
Strolling Magic Showdown.
Yes. Now, is that something that is awarded at the banquet for the AMA then too, or is this something separate or special or what?
This is a separate event. Mm-hmm. It's essentially speed dating, if you can imagine, for okay. for magicians. And we do 3 to 5 minutes per table. And we do it here at the Magic Castle in the Inner Circle.
Mm-hmm.
And you go from table to table, and some tables have judges, some don't.
So it's just on one particular night. It's not like all year long, and
correct.
Then you're judged on what you've done. Okay.
Yeah, I think they do two, maybe three a year.
Okay.
But it's a really fun event. You get to see a lot of different magicians perform,
and it's open to all the members, I guess.
It's open, yeah. If you're an associate member, you can judge. If you're a magician member, you can compete or judge. Mm-hmm. And even non-members can sit. They can't judge or compete, but they can watch and enjoy. And it's a lot of fun because you just get so much variety in such a short amount of time.
Now, did you get your experience in working at restaurants, cocktail parties, a little of everything, or what are you?
Yeah, a little bit of everything. I mean, I've got a weekly restaurant gig at Ciccone's in West Hollywood. So, you know, that's... If you've got consistent restaurant gigs, it's practice. It's great practice to try out new things and really refine it. So I've been doing restaurants for the past, you know, 7 or 8 years, and I definitely feel that my strolling and walk-around magic has come a long way because of that.
Sure, it's flight time that really means a lot. The more you do it, of course, the better it's going to be. Now, how many people actually were competing in this?
This last one was pretty busy. I think there were... maybe 20 competitors and maybe 50 judges. It was pretty insane.
And also, then, do you have a set time? In other words, you're doing 8 minutes or something? Or
yeah, they really want you to do about 3 to 4, really no more than 5 per table. Mm-hmm. And I think the key to winning this is making sure that you hit every table that has a judge. Because if you get, you know, 10 sevens mm-hmm. versus somebody who got 3 tens... Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to come out ahead. So,
and you know where the judges are, or not?
Yeah, judges. You know, judges have badges. Okay. Competitors have badges, and
but you're not lined up, so you're going from table one to table two to go all.
It's totally random. Okay. Yeah, when you see an open table, you go.
Wow.
You
know, so you're almost standing behind somebody, lurking, trying to.
Sometimes, sometimes if all the tables are taken, you're just kind of waiting, and when you see an opening, you jump at it.
Yeah, I understand. And how many years have they been doing this?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. I've been competing in this since 2012, and I know that they've been doing it for at least 4 years before that. Mm-hmm. And they've got a trophy down in the WC Fields bar that has the names of all the first place winners and the dates mm-hmm. that they won.
And you say that they do this 3 times a year?
Roughly two to three times, I believe, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you won during this last most recent one?
Most recent one? No, I was judging in the most recent. The one before that was, I want to say, September. Mm-hmm. And I won first place in that one. And then the one before that was maybe May. And I I didn't place. And then the one before that, I got third. One before that, I got first.
Yeah.
The one before that, I got third.
Okay.
So and then the first time I competed, I didn't place. But it's really nice. It's definitely a challenge, and you've got to go up against guys that are doing, you know, possibly the same stuff you are. So you have to make yours stand out. Yeah, it's all about personality.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, can a person win back to back to back, and then they retire it, or say you can't win that much?
You can win first place twice, and that's it. And it doesn't have to be back to back.
So in other words, you won twice, so that's why now you're a judge.
That's right.
You're out of the running.
That's right. Now I'm passing judgment on others. Yeah. But it was fun to be on this side, of it this time, to be a judge and see what I had been competing against. Because a lot of the competitors have been competing for the past 3 years against me. So it was nice to kind of see what I was up against, because I didn't see them perform before.
Right.
But now as a judge, you know, they all came to my table, and I got to see what they were doing. And I was really impressed. Right. I was actually kind of surprised. I'm like, I can't really believe I won first, because some of these guys are really amazing.
Yeah, and have been working for a long time. And
Interesting.
As I said, I had spoken to Jordan Gold, and he said that he had won, and so I didn't realize what this was like, if it was like an annual thing, but mm-hmm. 3 times a year, and just on that particular night. Well, interesting. Let me just ask you real quickly here.
Sure.
The name of my podcast is called A Magic Word. So as we kind of wrap up, what would be your magic word? What is it that's important to you? Wouldn't necessarily be, I don't mean like abracadabra necessarily, but...
Phalange.
Okay.
Only the reason it's actually, if you're familiar with the show Friends,
yes, cool.
Phoebe, her fake name was Regina Phalange.
Phalange, okay.
And I just think kind of phalange is a funny word.
Funny word.
And you know, I'm a big fan of Friends, so I figured why not? You know, nobody's going to expect it, and it's kind of funny to hear.
It is. Thank you very much, Steve Hamill.
Thank you
for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out.
I hope you're enjoying these tidbits and snippets of chats with friends around the Magic Castle. We will continue next week with conversations with Lisa and Scott Land, puppeteers who are working at the castle with me this week. We will also talk with Joe Furlow, the general manager of the Academy of Magical Arts. More good stuff coming, too, that I don't want to tip quite just yet, but stay tuned. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and Av Yaga, Bombay. Scotty out.